Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge, Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We appreciate all the great things you're doing for the community, that's for sure. Hey, this program is sponsored in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters and the United Steelworkers. We appreciate their support very much. Joining me today by phone from Healy and Hornack, Mike Healy. Mike, welcome back.
Hey, glad to be back.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. Now, Mike, as an employment attorney and as a civil rights attorney, you haven't been busy at all since the president's come into position, have you? I mean,
I'm probably busier than we've been in the last 10, 12 years.
Yeah, I can't imagine why, but that's another story. So a lot of things going on, a lot of work you guys are doing. We appreciate what you're doing. Talk to us about what the heck Donald Trump, President Trump, has shifted the NLRB around, and it's not quite the employee protection organization that it's supposed to be. It's something else.
Not at all. So what happened recently in a series of like five or six cases that was, you could almost describe it as a mid-December massacre, the current NLRB chairman, actually his term ended December 16th. He was Republican. There were two recent Trump appointees to the board, one at the end of August, one at the end of September. They got onto the board, and on cases where they weren't even on the board when the cases were brief, they reversed three or four significant labor decisions and really put a crimp in union organizing, rights of employees, on single and joint employer status, social media and employer policies, and on just sort of what kind of units you can have when you organize. And it's going to impact a lot of cases. I can run through what I call the massacre.
Go ahead.
And basically what happened, they reversed significant board precedent without notifying the parties they were going to be doing it. Sometimes in one case without even in cases where none of the asked the precedent be reversed. So not a lot of people saw this coming so quickly. So I think a lot of our listeners heard of what we call Browning-Ferris case, a single and joint employer status case, which sort of expanded the reach of when employers can be held liable for basically things they control. So the classic case out there is the McDonald's case in New York City, where the parent company, which has really controls these franchises, retains is under the old labor board. They were pursuing a case saying, McDonald's parent, you're responsible to franchisee for unfair labor practices committed at the local stores. Now they've shifted it, and they've made it sort of like for employers, it's like shooting ducks in a barrel now. Is that the parent company in these situations has to be exercising direct and immediate control over the labor relations of the McDonald's over in Homestead or in East Liberty in order for them to be held liable. And that basically makes it impossible in a lot of these cases. And although that case wasn't in front of them, it gut the McDonald's case that's been going through hearings for about a year in New York City. The other thing they did, you've all heard of like employer policies, and all these companies have handbooks about different employer policies. In the board, in a case in 2004, under the George Bush Labor Board, you know, there are certain situations, everyone agrees, if a company issues policies in response to an organizing drive or that directly are going to suppress someone's rights under federal labor law, those are violations. But the Bush Labor Board, not the Obama Labor Board, in 2004 said, if an employee could reasonably construe these policies as interfering with my rights as an employee to engage in protected activity, that's a violation. And the third one, which is, well, actually the third of four, which is significant, there was a case called Specialty Healthcare, which allowed unions to petition an organizing drive, to file a petition to organize a bargaining unit that was appropriate. Didn't have to be the most appropriate unit or the biggest unit. They've reversed that and basically, without getting into the weeds on it, issued a a decision that basically says, well, you can't defer to the companies what the companies want in this thing. And their final coup de grace is a few years ago, the labor board sped up and streamlined the procedure for petitioning for elections under the National Labor Relations Act. When employees want to organize, absent a recognition or card check, but recognition by card check, you gather cards, you file a petition, the cards at the labor board, and you have an election process. Up until a few years ago, that process could get bogged down for a long, long time. The board put in the process a quick procedure, which got rid of delays for a while. Well, just a couple weeks ago, the new board asked for comments about whether or not those rules should remain in place. So in very quick order, they're dismantling, you know, protections workers had in front of the National Labor Relations Board. So we have to figure out what we're going to do from here.
Absolutely. And, I mean, what is it that we can do out here in the field? You're fighting this in the courts. Other people are fighting it legislatively. But what can we do to make it perfectly clear that, you know what, this idea that corporations are making record profits and stockholders are making record profits, but yet, despite the fact that employees are working and producing products at record levels, their wages haven't gone up since 1970.
Yep. 1979, actually.
Okay.
They have that 9 years. But it's been frozen. Well, you know, years ago we had a saying that in the halls of justice, in the courthouses, the only justice is in the halls. I think, frankly, the main thing we can do, I mean, we'll still continue doing what we can at the labor board and in the courts, but I think, frankly, the main response to this has got to be, I mean, some people call it the resistance. I call it organizing. We have to hit the streets. I have labor clients who have done mass shutdowns and demanded voluntary recognition without having to get bogged down in labor board practices. So there's been recognition of thousands of low-wage workers at all the airports across the country, where the real party in power, not the little contracting employees, the airlines and the airport authorities in different cities, come to the table and basically negotiate the terms of deals. We just have to look at innovative ways to organize. And it's a matter of numbers. And we have to look at that in the context of the Janus case is probably going to come down
right
in June. Probably going to be bad news. But I think unions are right now are doing a pretty good job of organizing to sort of blunt the impact of Janus.
Right. And when we come back from break, let's talk about Janus and let's talk about, you know, Mike, I come out of the American Federation of Government Employees. We were an open shop. We organized every day.
Absolutely.
You know, so let's talk about that when we come back, okay?
Okay.
Fantastic. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborist Talk Radio.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school.
Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Allison is perfect. I mean, she'd never tell you that. She's humble and perfect. She likes everyone. She even likes her untidy roommate's weird guinea pig. Allison, wait, are you texting and driving? Allison, no. That's the exact opposite of what I was just saying about you. Why, Allison? Why? Texting and driving makes good people look bad. Visit StopTextStopRex.org, brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
We are the BCTGM fighting for American jobs. Nabisco, maker of iconic snack brands like Oreo, Ritz Crackers, and Chips Ahoy, has made its fortunes in America, and its patriotic response has been to send U.S. jobs to Mexico. As a result, consumers across the U.S. continue to boycott their Mexican-made products. Corporate revenues are down across North America. Consumers are sending a loud, clear message. Now, religious leaders from all faiths across the U.S. are calling for an investigation into this Nabisco business model and have scheduled a 6-city tour to look deeper into the matter. Just as the NAFTA negotiations associations are in the forefront, the faith community will begin to talk to workers, politicians, and other faith-based leaders addressing this U.S. jobs exodus by Nabisco from a moral and ethical perspective and widely publishing their findings. The BCTGM and Interfaith Workers Justice, its faith-based coalition partner, ask all people of faith and social conscience to join this fight against Nabisco's exploitation of workers in the U.S. and in Mexico. Millions are already not buying Nabisco products made in Mexico, and it's already impacting their bottom line. Join our fight for moral and economic justice at fightforamericanjobs.org.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Is that a faucet running?
That's not a faucet. That's a river rushing through the forest. Forest rivers provide over 100 million people with clean water to drink.
What? I can't hear you because of the vacuum.
That's not a vacuum. That's the trees in the forest cleaning up the air we breathe.
I didn't know the trees were so amazing.
Yep, and the forest gives us shade, trees to climb.
That's awesome. Let's go explore some more.
Visit the forest today and enjoy all it does just for you. To learn more about the forest and find one near you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hello, I'm Robert Sherrill from Duquesne University, here to announce the MBA Sustainable Business Practices program was just recognized by the Corporate Knights Better World MBA Rankings as the number one MBA program in the United States. Our innovative program integrates sustainability, real-world consulting projects, and climate strategy into our business management curriculum. Our MBA program at Duquesne produces the change agents and informed business leaders needed for the new American economy of tomorrow. Go to our website to learn more about our one-year MBA sustainability program that includes study abroad at www.mba.sustainability.duq.edu.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to The Union Edge, Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We appreciate all the great things you're doing for the community, that's for sure. Hey, this program is sponsored in part by the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra Members Association and ATU 85, and we appreciate their support very much. And joining us today, we've got Mike Healy from Healy and Hornack. Mike, welcome back.
Hey, good to be back.
Mike, it's a pleasure. We appreciate it. You know, I don't misconstrue anything I'm about to say as not saying that Janus versus AFSCME is an important thing. It is. But being a perhaps, I don't know, I've been very lucky and had the tutelage of people like Rosemary Trump and Charlie McAllister, and I know where we have come from here in the Pittsburgh area. I came out of the American Federation of Government Employees when I worked for the Department of Justice and for the Department of Homeland Security, and quite frankly, it is more difficult. It is more time-consuming, but it is not, and I need to repeat this, this is not a death blow for unions by any stretch of the imagination. Unions will continue. Unions will continue to grow. Unions will continue to thrive. It will mean a difference in how we get day-to-day work done. Am I right?
No, I actually agree with that. You know, you were in the AFGE, which was open shop. You know, the mine workers and steel workers, industrial unions down south, I know the mine workers had probably close to 100% people who were members and paying dues. The steelworkers had similar numbers. It's a different way of dealing with workers. Several of my clients now have already taken affirmative steps to deal with what Janus is probably going to say, and are cautiously optimistic. I think some unions that are sort of sitting back saying it's not going to be so bad, they're not preparing for and not changing their way of doing business. There's going to be a few unions that are going to have some troubles. But I don't think it's a death blow. It will be make things
right.
More difficult. On the flip side, some old timers will tell you it's not a bad thing because it forces unions and union reps to talk to the members more and more and to engage the members more and more. So that could be a good thing.
I want to say this in an affirmative manner. I don't want to say this in a negative manner, but I am a huge believer that the more that shop stewards are out there on the shop floor talking to people, finding out what's going on, the better off they're prepared they are.
Okay.
And as a leader of a union, You know, when I was with Homeland Security, I had 36 locals all across the country. I was responsible for it, and I wanted to get to each one of them as many times as I possibly could, simply for the fact that that exchange between what's actually going on in the minds of the members versus what you would get in a filtered and refiltered and refiltered message is an important thing. And one of the other things I got to say is Mike, I have always seen the anti-union elements in this country say, oh, we're not against unions. We're not against union members. We think they're the greatest thing since sliced bread. It's their leadership.
Yeah.
It's all kind of bullshit.
They are against unions. And I think their main thrust, like the Koch brothers and that, I mean, to some extent, is to keep wages down. That's part of it. But to the other extent, the right wing knows that probably the most organized political force against them in elections in large parts of the country are unions. And they, you know, frankly, there are elements in society that metaphorically want to kill us.
Yeah, they do. And quite honestly, you know, we as trade unionists have a responsibility to the membership. We have a responsibility to the union. We have a responsibility to the community to do the right thing. Because, Mike, time and time again, we have to remind people, look, when the unions do good, you may not be in a union shop. You may not be working for a company or a manufacturer that's unionized, but if there's a union next door or across the street or across town, your wages benefit from that union too. Because as the wages in the union come up, so do they come up with the rest of the community. So this is a good thing. Union members, you know, look at the building trades here in the United States. My God, they spend hundreds and hundreds of hours every year as individuals working in the community, helping seniors make sure that their furnaces are running right. And, you know, up in Flint, Michigan right now, the plumbing trades, they're replacing people's pipes for free.
And a lot of trade unionists went to Puerto Rico.
Right, right. You know, so when the unions do well, they have the ability to do that more and more and more. And that's what they want to do because, you know, that guy, it's a union plumber, is also the guy that's coaching your son's or daughter's little league team, okay? That gal, it's a plumber. She's doing something else. I mean, you know, they're working on Habitat for Humanity. So this.
Yeah, but even more so, at the beginning of our call today, you talked about how wages have been basically frozen since 1979.
Right.
You can do a direct chart of wages being frozen and declining union density.
Right.
From 45 to about 1979, wages were rising with productivity, but as union density started to decline, wages started being frozen.
Right.
I mean, unions have been the best anti-poverty program the country's ever seen.
Right. And one of the other things I want to put out there, and a lot of people don't realize this, you know, we talk about our greatest generation, our generation, the people that were in this country that fought World War II. Not necessarily as soldiers and sailors, airmen and Marines, but those people that stayed behind and ran the factories and built the equipment and the tanks and the airplanes and the raw materials that our soldiers and sailors, airmen and Marines needed. They were all union.
Uh-huh. Yep, that's right.
And without the partnership between unions and the manufacturers and the government, we probably couldn't have pulled it off.
That is likely true.
So right now today, and I'm a firm believer, Mike, that, you know, the polls consistently show that 70% of the population here in the United States would join a union today. And the more we talk about it, the more we get away from the Archie Bunker type stigma, the Archie Bunker type perception of what union people are, and we get down to the bread and butter on this issue, and how do we in the community continue to grow? How do we be continue to be effective in educating not only the rest of our community but our politicians?
Well, I think sort of two ways, and we work on both these models. Is the union's got to organize, organize, organize. That was a famous quote of
right.
John L. Lewis years ago. But both within their unions and in their industries outside the unions. And secondly, unions need to work with their community allies. Pittsburgh United, the Pittsburgh Interfaith Impact Network, things like that, and like in the Western Pennsylvania area, those situations exist across the country. And build those coalitions and build those alliances so that it's not just unions standing alone, it's unions and the community standing together, which is a much more powerful united front. And while I'm a lawyer and we'll spend our time doing that, I think, you know, we try to create space for organizers and for unions. But I think the main way we do this is that unions and the community groups have to organize and work together. And they have to fight.
It is. And, you know, there's no egos involved in any of that, is there? Yeah. You know, and quite honestly, we are stronger when we work together. And yeah, sometimes you know, we gotta, you know, listen to the other person. And you know what? When it's all said and done, we all are in a better position because of it. You know, and I'm excited to see what's going to be happening over the next couple of years.
Yeah, in fact, before I got on the call, and I'll go back to it, I'm in a meeting where on paid sick litigation in Pennsylvania, we're getting unions and community groups and ally groups to sign on to amicus briefs to try to establish paid sick leave laws in Pennsylvania, or the right of municipalities to pass paid sick leave laws, which is an issue all across the country right now.
Right. And I mean, you know, Mike, between you and me, why would you want to go to a restaurant when your waiter or waitress has the walking crud? You
know? That's true.
I mean,
true.
Let them stay on. Pay them a day, you know?
Yeah.
No skin off your, you know, makes your customers much happier. Mike, any final words for us today?
Yeah, actually, and this is just a quick plug, and maybe we do a whole show on it because we have a bunch of these cases. People have heard about the sexual harassment allegations going on, the Me Too movement.
Right.
And I think people need to focus. I'm glad the Hollywood actresses are coming out. And those are women of pretty significant power. The women who really face this stuff are the low-wage working women, your waitresses, your janitors, your maids in hotels. They're the ones that really face this stuff. And I think that's something we all need to focus on. And the best way to focus on it is through unions. We've had unions, one out of our unions in a couple of situations, they got bosses engaging in harassment fired.
There you go. And that's the way it should be.
Yep.
Mike, I want to thank you very much. How do we find out more about your firm?
You can email us. I don't have the 800 number off the top of my head, but you can email me at mike@unionlawyers.net or call us at 412-391-7711.
There you go. Mike, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Let us know how we can help. In the meantime, do me a favor. Stay on the line. I got a quick question for you as we transition into break.
Okay.
I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.